And our next remarks. My notebook is my brain today. The next remarks are, are by Edwin Walker from U.S. Law Shield. The Giant Awakens, the Outrageous Enforcement of Existing Gun Laws. And before Mr. Walker comes to the podium, the Second Amendment Foundation would like to thank U.S. Law Shield for their extremely generous contribution, which helped feed you last night. So you can thank them for the delicious hors d'oeuvres and appetizers. Thank you.
Howdy, how y'all doing this afternoon? Glad to see we got such a full crowd still here at 4:45 in the afternoon. It's good to see everybody. So you're going to hear from another lawyer. You probably heard from enough lawyers today. I think they stacked all the lawyers towards the end of the presentation today. So I'm just here to add to that. Now, as opposed to the lawyers that spoke to you earlier, my field is a little bit different in that I am one of the primary program attorneys for U.S. Law Shield, started off as Texas Law Shield. Our firm specifically handles most of the emergency calls that come in. We handle a lot of the cases involving members, and so whereas the lawyers, the very fine lawyers you heard earlier, who litigate against the government, basically they attack the government, they sue the government, which is a fantastic job. They do a lot of appellate work. What we do is we focus on defending people from the government. That's what we do. And we see how the government has overreached in many ways and how the government arbitrarily enforces its laws because, you know, I know if you listen to the anti-gun folks whenever they talk, they make it seem like there are no gun laws whatsoever, that we live in a world where we are starting at ground zero, there are no gun laws, oh my God, all we want are common sense gun laws. Failing to realize, of course, that there are hundreds and thousands of laws on the books already at the state, federal, and local level. And these laws, of course, are being enforced every single day by the police and by the prosecutors across the country. Now, this entails a lot of unjust prosecutions, a lot of unjust arrests. You know, the police are out there, their main ability, the main tool that they have is the ability to arrest. Prosecutors, the main tool that they have is the ability to convict. Now, of course, whenever you have only, you know, one tool and your hammer, everything begins to look like a nail. And so this is the way we see a lot of these laws being enforced. Now, as the primary program lawyers for U.S. Law Shield and Texas Law Shield, we advise many of our members on these types of situations. Just to give you an example, the title of my talk is The Outrageous Enforcement of Gun Laws. And I did have a PowerPoint. I don't know if it's being shown up on the screen or not. We have taken calls for such incidences as we had a member who's was involved in a car wreck, simple car wreck, wasn't even accused of being at fault in the car wreck. However, the police confiscated his gun that was in the vehicle, and it took us over 9 months and a court order to get that gun returned to him because the police decided that they needed to keep it to run tests on it to see, of course, if it had ever been used in a crime, which it hadn't. Because it had been owned by him, basically, since it was purchased from the retailer. But yet they use this as a common excuse to keep people separated from their firearms. Additionally, we have advised many members, whenever they have been scolded, taken to task, and even harassed by law enforcement officers for exercising their right to possess a gun. This especially is true with regard to individuals who have a license to carry a handgun. Now, in the state of Texas, where we are based, up until just a few years ago, your handgun carried by a license holder had to be concealed. But they changed that law to allow a license holder to carry a visible handgun as long as it's carried in a belt or shoulder holster. Now, this has been the law since January 1st, 2016. But yet, even as recently as 2 weeks ago, we had a member who was harassed by a police officer who was telling him that since his old license said concealed handgun license, then he had not yet received his new license that said license to carry on it, that this still meant that he was restricted to conceal carrying only, and that he was not allowed to carry openly because his license still said concealed on it. Now, this is an officer who has been sworn to uphold the law, and yet he does not know the law. We've also had to deal with prosecutors. In one particularly outrageous example, we had a prosecutor who basically our member was the victim of a crime. He was, a gun was stolen out of his car. He was the victim of the crime. The individual who stole it out of his car was caught, was prosecuted, was convicted of this crime, and yet the prosecutor refused to agree to an order that would have returned the stolen property, the gun, back to its rightful owner. And of course, his statement in justifying this was, well, I'm just not going to allow another gun to be put out on the streets, as if returning it to its rightful owner was somehow contributing to the crime itself. Fortunately, the judge, of course, did not agree with that and immediately signed the order returning the gun. Also recently, in a particularly strange set of facts that we had, there was an individual who got his hand caught in a piece of machinery on his own property. And this piece of machinery basically had taken his hand, had captured him into the machine, where he suffered a very egregious injury to his hand. He could not extract his hand from the machine and started yelling for help, as any of us would. Nobody was responding to his cries for help, perhaps because his voice did not carry very far. Well, he thought to himself, what does carry very far, what will get people's attention, is of course a gunshot. And so he had his gun with him. He fired two shots into the ground beside him. Of course, that did get people's attention. They came running. He was rescued from the machine. The police, of course, also responded. He was taken to the hospital where he was mended to return home only to find out that a warrant had been issued for his arrest for disorderly conduct because he had discharged his firearm in public. So we see a lot of arbitrary and capricious enforcement of these laws. On the administrative side, the Texas DPS, the individuals or the agency that is responsible for evaluating and administering these licenses to carry, which of course Texas is a shall issue state, a very proud shall issue state, which, as many of you know, you meet the qualifications, you get the license, there is no discretion. You cannot prevent it. However, the DPS, since the day that the concealed handgun license was born, way back in 1995, has fought vigorously to limit or try to keep people from getting their licenses to carry. And now we're seeing a very interesting twist in the law, in that, or in the way that these applications are being evaluated, in that the DPS now is somehow considering every single misdemeanor assault. So if somebody applies and they have a misdemeanor assault conviction on their record, the DPS has taken the position that that is presumptively an assault for family violence, because an assault for family violence under federal law means that you cannot possess a firearm. If you cannot possess a firearm under federal law, you're disqualified from getting a license to carry under Texas law. And so the DPS position has taken the position that if you have an assault in your background for a misdemeanor, even a Class C misdemeanor, an assault for which you could not have even gone to jail for, they are taking the position that they are considering it to be an assault, family violence, unless you prove to them that it is not. And of course, that is a ridiculous position to take, but That's what happens when you give the government power. Now, in my PowerPoint that I had, but I guess it's not coming up, I had some illustrations of crimes that have been, people who have been arrested in other states, states where we have seen laws that exist that people have mentioned earlier, red flag laws, magazine capacity bans, assault weapons bans, and I'd had several of those in my PowerPoint that I was going to show you. Some of you may have heard about, some of them were actually mentioned here today. There was a New York man who was arrested and charged for after he had killed two burglars that were burglarizing his house. This happened in the town of Deerfield in New York. He was not charged for killing the people, the burglars who had entered his house, but he was charged for possessing an unregistered firearm. That firearm turned out to be a gun that his father had left him, so he had inherited the firearm. He had no idea that he was supposed to have registered it. It made news. It's on the internet. You can look it up. Fortunately, those charges were dropped against him. However, that New York law is still on the books. It is still lawful to be prosecuted under it. And now that this guy has been arrested but let go, is the next person who is arrested for such in such a ridiculous circumstance, are they going to be afforded the same courtesy? Of course, one would hope, but we all know probably not. Especially now that the prosecutors can say, look, you should have known about it. We had this case earlier. It made headlines. That should have made you aware that you need to be registered, or you need to register all of your firearms, regardless of how you acquired them. The next case, of course, showing the outrageous enforcement of laws would have been the law that the situation that Mr. Schilling, former Major League pitcher Curt Schilling, alluded to earlier, the case of Gary Wills, where he was sort of the first victim. Hopefully we don't see other victims. However, experience tells us we probably will. He was the first victim of Maryland's red flag law. Somebody turned him in, said he needed to be the subject of a red flag protection order. The police decided that it was a brilliant idea to go knock on his door at 5 a.m., to claim that they were there to confiscate his firearms. He, we don't know the exact circumstance, but I can imagine it was a state of confusion, answered the door with his firearm in his hand. Then the police, in their narrative, said that he struggled with them, and so they shot and killed him. And then, just a few months later, Maryland basically released the figures stating that in the first three months of their red flag laws, that they had seized firearms from 148 people under their red flag law. Of course, citing it as, we have saved lives by doing this. I hope that they have learned how to enforce these, or to issue these protective orders, serve these protective orders. But I'm sure that there has been a lack of due process. Fortunately, nobody else has been killed in the state of Maryland about it. Then I had another story with regard to a man in Connecticut who was investigated under Connecticut's red flag law because he had posted online that he had liked certain memes that involved mass shootings. And they felt that this made him dangerous, even though he had no criminal background, had never committed a crime before, but that they went in and searched his internet history, found out that he had liked certain memes about school shootings, also found out that he had attempted to buy high-capacity magazines over the internet. This, of course, gave the police then probable cause to go in, search him, search his possessions. They found that he was in possession of two high-capacity magazines, and so they have decided to prosecute him for that. And, in fact, whenever his attorney went to go get a bond, I believe the bond was at some outrageous amount. I can't find it now. For possessing two high-capacity magazines, I believe it was something like, $250,000 bond for the possession of two high-capacity magazines. And then, of course, there was the story that made headlines a couple of months ago about the Colorado teen who was not allowed to return to school because he had posted pictures of him and his family going out to the gun range and shooting guns. They said that they were investigating him for a threat. Fortunately, school officials did come to the conclusion that there is nothing wrong with going to a range, but yet it illustrated a Colorado law or Colorado policy called Safe to Tell, which, interestingly enough, in the common vernacular now in Colorado is called Safe to SWAT. And is being used by teens. What started off as a school program designed to get teens to make authorities aware of teens that they believe may be the next school shooter has now turned into, of course, a situation where teens are turning each other in as practical jokes or as a way to get revenge against other teens that they do not like. And, of course, the last story that we had was a California man who was arrested for possession of 1,000 guns. Of course, they said, oh, my God, who should have 1,000 guns? Nobody should have 1,000 guns. He was outed. They said this. Somebody went to the police and said, this man has got too many guns. You should go and investigate him. Out of the 1,000 guns, they are now prosecuting him for, I believe, 23 out of the 1,000 they found were assault weapons under California law. So I point this out to show that if these laws come into effect, they are subject to the same aggressive and arbitrary and capricious enforcement by law enforcement. We need to, those of us who don't live in the states that we know, that we in Texas commonly call the usual suspects, that'd be California, Hawaii, Oregon, Maryland, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, you know the list. They call, you know, it's often said that the states are the laboratory of democracy. And I think that those of us who don't live in those states should make sure that that Frankenstein's monster never leaves those laboratories and, in fact, are returned to the grave. So.